WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. W.H. Macy's long association with David Mamet began when he was a student of Mamet's at Goddard College. Since then, Macy has acted in several of Mamet's plays, including the original productions of American Buffalo, The Water Engine, and last year's production at Lincoln Center of Bobby Gould in Hell. Macy's also performed in the two films directed by Mamet, House of Games and Things Change. And the two work together at Chicago's St. Nicholas Theater and are co-founders of their Atlantic Theater Company in New York. Last year, Mamet was executive producer and Macy the director for the HBO TV play Lip Service, which won an ACE Award. Macy is in Philadelphia this week to direct a revival of the Mamet play called Squirrels. It's a three-character, one-act play about the process of writing. I asked Macy what the advantage is to work in the same orbit of writers and actors that gravitate to these Mamet productions.
It's just more fun to work with your pals than it is to work with strangers. And also, auditions are the worst creatures that God ever invented. I mean, they're just horrifying experiences for everyone involved. So it's just easier to call up someone you know. It's more fun.
Is there a sort of a set of codes or unspoken language that begins to develop between you that makes directing and acting, collaborating, easier?
I think so. You don't have to take time to get to know each other. You know, doing a play, regardless of the play, is a very intimate experience. The actors are called upon to be intimate with each other almost instantly. We had 3 weeks rehearsal for this thing. And even there's an intimacy that's required when people are screaming at each other. If you're really going to do it, if you're really going to tell the truth to each other, you got to take off the gloves and yell at the other guy. Well, you can't do that with a stranger. So what happens when it's a pickup team through the audition process is that you're called to be intimate with someone that you hardly even know. And in the worst case scenario, people literally climb in bed together who have known each other for a week. So I hate that stuff. And yeah, if you're working with your pals, you can bypass all that. If this is the third or fourth play, you know each other and get right to work.
You also have a history with this production of Squirrels. You acted in it when it was a production 14 years ago.
Oh, God, yeah.
How did you change your point of view on the play, or did you, from being an actor in it to being the director of it?
It was an important play for me because it was sort of seminal. It was the first play we did in Chicago, and I think I'd have to say it was the first professional play I ever did for actual civilians out there to come in and see, where the money being lost was my money. And I remembered the production a lot. Other plays that I've done, I can't remember them 5 days after it closes. I couldn't remember one of the lines. It goes right out of my head. But I remembered this one because it was so important to me. Also, it's got such memorable lines, as you well know. So my point of view changed in that I got to see it, which is a thrill. I've just been delighted to watch something. I guess it would be like watching yourself grow up. If you could go back and look at yourself as a five-year-old, it's just such great fun to see something that was so important to me right in front of my eyes. Now I'm a spectator.
I'm interested in how a play gets from the two-dimensionality of the printed page and upright, you know, into three dimensions.
Well, you analyze the script for actions, and then the actors drill what those actions are, the objectives, if you will, if you want to be technical about it. Once they know what their objectives are, the way I work, we sit around a table. Of the 3 weeks, we spent the first week around the table, and we broke the script down into its acting objectives, the beats, if you will, and we practice that from the table, just reading it over and over again. The result of that is the second week, when you put it on its feet, blocking really becomes so logical, because if Arthur knows what he wants from Edmund at that point, the two characters in the play, all I got to do is say, start there. He's got to move. The blocking, the staging of it becomes obvious because he's got to go over there if he wants that. So it's quite organic, I find. If the actors understand what they're doing, what they want from the other guy, the thing just springs to life. It's not difficult at all.
Somebody made the observation that even the ums and the ahs are all very carefully scripted.
Mm-hmm.
but hell for an actor to try to memorize.
Oh, my God. They went insane.
Any tricks that help you memorize David Mamet's sort of very carefully scored plays?
Nah, it's just hard work. I memorize in the morning, and I don't do it for more than 2 hours at a time because my mind turns to mush. If you really concentrate, you can memorize 3 or 4 pages at a clip. I mean, even if it's 3 or 4 pages of monologue, it's just hard work. I used to say, I thought it was so cool to say, people would say, how do you memorize all those lines? And I would say in a cavalier offhand way, oh, that's the easiest part. The hard part is figuring out what the guts of the project are. Well, that's just so much turkey talk. I hate memorizing lines. It's the worst part of the whole business. There's nothing to be done except sit down and do it. Poor, the folks in this thing, Todd Weeks and Natalia Nogolich and Roger Serbici, they just went insane. They've been running these lines forever. The ums are important, too, because he writes, that's one of the reasons he's our greatest writer. Everything is in metered. Everything is has a rhythm, a specific rhythm. And it is not natural speech. It's poetry. It's iambic pentameter, usually. And you can hear it after they get the lines down. If they paraphrase one little bit, if one comes in the wrong spot, it's as if someone was walking across the floor and suddenly tripped on something. The rhythm gets knocked off, and it's not as pretty. It's not as funny. It's not as fluid as it was. Those ums mostly have to do with rhythm.
I imagine that at some point the play leaves the venue of the playwright. It becomes sort of the director's to help shape it. And at what point does it leave you as the director and sort of becomes the actor's play?
Well, that's a great question. I would guess that the actors know more about the play than the director after the second or third performance of it in front of an audience. They start to take it over. Some directors won't give it up. As an actor, I've experienced that. They keep wanting to get in and tinker with what I'm doing. And at that point, I've always felt me as the actor. Hey, I'm the expert on it now. Which is not to say that the director, that it doesn't need an outside point of view, because an actor can only see what he's doing. You can't see the overall picture. But second or third preview, I'd say that the actors know more about this play than I do now.
Is that process different when you work with David Mamet in film like House of Games or Things Change?
Well, movies are different in general. Mm-hmm. The process of rehearsing a play is essentially creating habits, creating habitual behavior. Because let's face facts, when you do a play, even if it's a long run, most of it is essentially on autopilot. If you have one moment in every scene, one organic moment where the muse comes down and sits on your shoulder for a while, that's a good night. You're doing good work. If you have one spontaneous organic moment, the rest of it is, you know, you're doing what you habitually do. In movies, because they're rehearsed so little, you don't have time to create any habits. So it's really seat-of-the-pants sort of acting. All you got to do is get it right once, with everyone else getting it right at the same time, and then you go on. So, yeah, the director really stays over your shoulder there.
Before we get back to our conversation, let's hear a clip from the HBO movie Lip Service, which Macy directed. It starred Griffin Dunn and Paul Dooley.
History in the making, huh?
How do you mean?
Well, our first show and all.
Yes, you're first. Good luck.
Well, Louis, this looks like the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Pardon?
You know, Casablanca. Bogey, end of the movie.
Ah.
Famous line.
I'm afraid I'm not a real student of film.
Oh. Hell, you were probably there.
Where?
Casablanca.
No.
Still, you've been around. Korea, right? Vietnam?
Here and there.
Don't kid me. I know my history. Those were the days, huh? Getting your hands dirty? That was journalism.
That's what we called it. Well, those were different times.
Come on.
Much different from today.
You directed a movie called Lip Service,
right?
That was also filled with words and wordplay and images of television, and it seemed very Mamet-like. Uh-huh. It was written by Howard Corder, and I guess I mean that in the complimentary sense.
Right.
What is it that attracts you to plays and productions that that tend to have that kind of meaty word game.
It seems to me that you say it's Mamet-like. To me, that means it's good writing, because David's writing is always beautiful. American Buffalo is the greatest example, or Glengarry Glen Ross. I mean, they're such coarse plays. They deal with coarse men duking it out in these underhanded kind of ways. And so one would look at it and say, well, it's about lowlifes. And yet, the language, if you study it, is so beautifully sculpted. So what do I like with writers? I like beautiful language that's got a specific voice, which has a meter and a rhyme and a rhythm, which is pleasant to the ear. And I like it to be American, because I like things American. It's got to speak to my ear. The way I can listen to Shakespeare and love it and appreciate it, but it ain't my voice. Howard Korter is one of the great writers these days. And I think a lot of times he's compared to David, and I don't think it's fair. It's good writing, the end. And it seems to me that all good writing is going to share certain qualities. Like, people used to say that David was very much like Mr. Pinter. Well, they're not really alike. They have certain similar qualities in that it's so beautifully sculpted, but two completely different voices. And I think David and Howard are two completely different voices.
Was Lip Service first television
it was
movie
made,
direction?
Made for HBO. First, it was a one-act play by Howard Korter at the Punchline, Manhattan Punchline, in Manhattan, strangely enough. And then HBO bought it, and then I came on. I don't know how I got to direct that. I had never directed something. It was just a treat to work on. It's dry. Boy, it's as dry as can be. But everyone liked it a lot.
Lip Service is a television play set within a television studio.
Right.
What did you decide to have most fun with in that context of kind of a play within a play?
Well, it was the first one I ever did, so I'll tell you the truth. I didn't have fun with anything. It was the most horrifying experience. Not only did I not know the answer to most of the questions I was asked, I couldn't understand what the questions were. So I was making everything up, and they come at you a million miles an hour. The thing if I had any fun, it was in the week of rehearsal before we started shooting. And that is rehearsing just like in a play. And there I was in my elephant. I knew what I was doing there. And Paul Dooley and Griffin Dunn were the two guys. And they were just wonderful actors. Paul Dooley is like an American treasure. And so we had fun there. The technical stuff, it was the most fun when I finally got in the editing room and could put it together. Because that's like putting together a puzzle, something that you screwed up in shooting. You can try to fix with the editing. It's great fun. Also, we used a Netaflex, so you actually got to pick up the film and sling it over you. I did some of the cutting myself. You got this big garbage can filled with outtakes, and you've got three things of film around your neck and two others that you're holding up to the light, and you cut them all together and recut them. That was great. I love that stuff. That went on for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Was there a moment in your youth, you know, when you were 8, 9, 10, when you discovered you had fun with words? And
I was a terrible student, and the only thing I could do was talk. I talked myself out of most of the situations I got in. I just made wretched grades my whole life, but I was always pretty good at talking. So when I graduated from high school, I'd done really well. They had what they call the Welcome Home Award, which is sort of a popularity contest for seniors. And I won that, which was a big to-do. And at the same time, they were wondering if I was going to graduate because my grades were so wretched. So good for me that I had won that award, because they were thinking, we can't flunk the guy. We can't flunk the guy that got the Welcome Home Award. They called me and they said, we don't have a grade for you for geometry. I said, well, I didn't take geometry. I said, no, you have to take geometry, but we don't have the grade. I said, well, I didn't take geometry. said, no, you must take geometry. So I took algebra 1 and 2. I said, we know that, but you must take geometry. So what's your grade? I said, I didn't take geometry. We went like that for 5 minutes. This is 2 weeks before graduation. I don't think my diploma is real. I don't think it's legitimate. I talked my way out of everything.
You play a Marine in a scene in a Western Union Telegraph office in the House of Games, a movie that David Mamet directed. And it's the scene where Joe Mantegna and Lindsay Krauss are working the first con. And the idea of the con, of persuading somebody to believe that you're somebody you're not, seems to be integral to the acting profession. And I'm wondering, do you see yourself when you're an actor as pulling off a con?
No, not really. When you combine what the actor is doing with the script and the production, the sets, the lights, the costumes, all of that stuff, the result is an illusion which looks like a con. There was an interesting thing. Dave Mamet was on Dick Cavett's show a couple of years ago, and Cavett said something to the effect of, well, really what an actor does is lie. I mean, that's what they do for a living. They just lie. They lie very well. And David looked at him sort of confusedly, watch your adverbs, confusedly, and said, no, actors are paid to tell the truth. And Cavett said, yeah, but they're lying. And David said, no, they're telling the truth. Then Cavett said, well, we're really both saying the same thing. Well, they weren't. And I don't think they could have said two different things if they had tried. It's an actor's job to tell the truth under imaginary circumstances. And the result will be an illusion. I suddenly become the character. But what the actor's doing is something simple and direct, and he's telling the truth at any given time.
There's a sketch that shows up in Squirrels at one point where Arthur the writer is describing the structure of of a story he wants to write. You start out with nothing, rising, your climax, and then you fall and you're left with nothing. Do you feel sometimes after a production ends that, and the stage is empty again, that you started with nothing and you're left with nothing again?
Yeah. It doesn't make me sad, though. I just love that. I feel that we're like the people in the... That's why I love the theater. You had to have been there. If you missed it, you missed it. It's gone. It's sort of a Sisyphean myth, and on one level, I mean, we just keep doing the same thing and there's nothing to show for it. But in the minds of the people that did get to be there at that moment, it's so thrilling. And I love the idea that we create something that will just go away. There will be no record, and it's done. It's so now. So it's bittersweet, but I just sort of love it when after the last one and you see them tearing down the set the next day. I kind of like that. I don't know why.
Well, Bill Macy, thank you very much for coming and being a guest with us on Fresh Air.
It's been great talking to you.
Actor and director W.H. Macy. He's currently directing a production of David Mamet's play Squirrels for the Philadelphia Festival of New Plays. His next project, directing a Mamet play for a live radio broadcast on public radio. This is Fresh Air.